Episode 45, interview with the makers of the sci-fi feature film, Remember. This episode of Strangers and Aliens is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/strangers. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend, Plumber. Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast. I am Ben Avery, and I've got a very exciting episode in store for you today. A month or two after we posted episode 24 of the podcast, the roundtable discussion that we had at the Gideon Film Festival about Christian sci-fi movies and how there's basically no Christian sci-fi movies, I received an email from a man named Greg Lammerman, asking if I would be interested in checking out their Christian sci-fi movie, Remember. And I was, and they sent it to me, and I watched it. And I don't want to say too much about it right now, other than to say that I liked it. I liked it a lot. I like watching independent movies, and I like watching science fiction movies. Unfortunately, often independent science fiction movies do not mix well. It's just not a very good combination. Usually has to do with budget. Remember, though, was surprisingly good, especially considering the budget they had to work with. I'm not going to tell you what that budget is right now. I'll let you discover that in the interview. But it's pretty amazing. So this episode does have plenty of geeking out about sci-fi and talking about spiritual issues and talking about faith and pop culture and the connection between, you know, movies and art and your Christianity and all that kind of thing. But I will say that if you are a Christian creative, you know, someone who's into writing movies or writing novels or making movies or drawing comics or whatever it is that you do, if you are into the creative arts and you are a Christian and you have a vision, you know, you want to do something and you want to use your talents for God, that kind of thing, I think you'll get a little bit more out of this than the average listener. It's going to be a fun episode whether you are into that stuff or not. But for this episode, there's just some very encouraging and interesting things that the Lammermans have to share. And I was very excited when I started finding out the story behind their movie to actually get them on the podcast so they could talk about that here. So I hope you're as encouraged as I was, and I hope you're motivated after listening to this interview. But for right now, I'm just going to stop babbling and let's get into the interview. So now I'm here with Dallas Lammerman and Greg Lammerman, and they have the same last name because they are father and son. And Dallas was the director of Remember, and Greg was the writer of Remember. And if you guys could go ahead and say hello to the other strangers and aliens out there who are listening.
Hello, strangers.
Hi.
Nice to the aliens.
Yeah. Nice. You have to split it up sometimes because some people are strangers, some people are aliens, and then some people are both. So. So I had a chance to watch Remember 1.5 times now, and I really, really enjoyed it. I wanted to talk about the movie. I also wanted to talk about some of where the movie came from, and then I also wanted to just talk about some of the geeky influences behind the movie. So to start, could you please describe the movie and just what it's about in its in its essence, and maybe a little bit of the plot, but which I don't think will be an easy feat. There's a lot of meat in this movie, so it's about a lot of things.
We had a real hard time making an elevator speech about this movie, because you're right, it's about a lot of things. There's a lot of twists in it.
Yeah, I know, that's what I was going to say. Can we describe this movie? No.
Can't do it. What's your next question? No, we'll give it a shot. It's in the year 2050, in a totalitarian dystopian future, in which the Platonic state, Plato's Republic, has come to pass, in which the children are raised by the state. Eugenics is the matching of the men and women. So basically, the family is broken down. So that's the setting. And the main character, of course, needs to be the enforcer of that regime. And he comes through messages from outside, which happen to be biblical, to see that he's got a choice between God and man, basically. And so that's the main struggle that happens in the story.
So this was a independent sci-fi Christian film. And listening to the commentary, it was interesting because where it kind of came from as far as the initial germ of the idea to do the movie is very, very, very similar to what got me actually started in writing comic books. It almost was word for word the same kind of thing happening, where it was just a challenge on a message board or a internet, you know, email group or something like that. The challenge was put out, you could do this, you could do a feature film for cheap, and then who was it that said, well, why don't we?
That would be me.
Okay, so
we've been wanting to make features for a long time. We were looking at doing another educational movie, which we'd done in the past, or maybe a documentary, and then this came up. I was aware of it. I said, why don't we do that? And my dad said, sure.
Yeah.
So we did it.
It had been really in the front of my mind for the last 6 months before that we thought we could do it, but were we brave enough to take that step to make that feature, which has been our goal for the last 5 years, or 5 years up to that point. Yeah. And you're right, this Christian, if any of your listeners are filmmakers, they need to go to christianfilmmakers.org. It's a forum in which all kinds of topics are discussed. And this forum, what was the thread, Dallas?
How to make a successful independent micro-budget film, something
right.
Like that.
And so a lot of people were talking about that. One guy on there has a lot more experience than everybody else, and he put it out there finally after several pages of that. Who's going to do it? So we are the ones that did it. We said, we're going to do it, and actually on that thread, we're the only ones that actually ended up following through. So we're pretty proud of that.
Yeah, I'm listening to all this, and I'm hearing the number, $4,000. You made this movie for $4,000. So my question to you is, if that's your budget, why are you going with science fiction, which is traditionally, I mean, you've got special effects and you've got costuming. I mean, you went with like the most expensive genre that you could possibly go for with this micro budget movie. What were you thinking, man? What was going on?
That we liked science fiction, I think.
I think that's just what the idea was, and it needed to be science fiction. Also, I don't think we were too afraid of it. Dallas has become very proficient at visual graphics, or not using
visual effects
and computer graphics. And so we weren't afraid of that. He's got the expertise to do that. And I really did start right from the very beginning of the kernel of the idea, praying all along, as we have all of our other projects, but saying, we're going to do this film, God, it's got to be your film. And so we didn't know where stuff was going to come from. And as we wrote the script, we didn't know how it was going to be done. And one of the things that was given us in this forum that we were on was that you go ahead and write the film as if money was not an object. And then you can scale it back to reality later. So that's how we did it. We wrote it as if money wasn't going to be an object.
Yeah, I actually had a publisher I worked for once. He said, give me the Cadillac, and then we'll scale it back to the VW bug.
And we were just really pleased that God kept providing all kinds of things that we thought we were not going to be able to have. You mentioned costumes. Some people we'd never met that live a half hour away from us who have been on the same path as us for years, and somehow our paths had never crossed. We met them right as we were in the initial stages of developing the script, to discover that they were costumers, and they every costume you see in that film was made by the Weens family, and we didn't expect to have any of that kind of production value.
We had actually scaled back the script quite a bit so that we could do it probably cheaper than $4,000, and then God added extra things in to bring it back up. So costumes were one of those things where, we weren't really planning. We were planning to go more basic than that and ended up being bigger. And just another bit on one of the reasons that we chose sci-fi is just sci-fi is so powerful. Like, you got it opens up opportunities and angles that you can't get in normal dramas quite the same. It gives you angles and things you can talk about. I'm losing all my words here.
Well, you have permission to bring up topics that might look, cheesy or not authentic in a normal drama.
Well, and I was reminded watching Remember, I was reminded of a lot of Twilight Zone episodes where they're able to talk about racism, or they're able to talk about, paranoia in ways that weren't acceptable on TV at that time. And the same with Star Trek, too. And so I'm watching this movie. I'm like, so this is a movie about parenthood and the loss of parenthood. This is a movie about, addiction. This is a movie about using drugs to get away from your problem. I mean, there's so many things going on in there. But because it's in a sci-fi setting, you kind of roll with it, I think, a little more. And the other thing, I was reminded of a lot of older sci-fi movies like Logan's Run or, these aren't movies, but like 1984 and Brave New World and that kind of thing, where it's just the scary future. So one question, this might be a loaded question, but is this future Canada or future America that you're writing about here?
Somewhere nebulously in North America, it looks like.
I think it's post both.
Okay.
So where exactly, we're not sure. It might be way north. It kind of feels like it's perpetually winter there, so I don't know.
It's very cold looking.
Just so you know, we're not prophets.
Okay.
can't totally answer that.
Well, but that's what sci-fi does, is it extrapolates on what could be. And so what were you extrapolating on then for this? You're looking at the present and extrapolating a pretty bleak future. What were you looking at when you were doing that?
Well, probably several threads there. I'll just name one, Dallas. But there was a documentary we watched called
Demographic Winter.
Thank you. Demographic Winter talks about the fact that our population replacement rate is actually below replacement. And even though our population seems to be going up at the time, it's not due to having too many children. It's due to us living too long. And at some point...
I don't know about living too long. Living longer, maybe.
Well, I'm speaking from the United Nations point of view.
Oh, okay, right? I see.
That we're living a long time, and that's the reason we've got this population. It's not an explosion. That's a misnomer. It's one of the things that documentary pointed out. But we have an increase in population, but that's not going to last forever. At some point in the next 20 years or so...
Or 50 years.
Yeah. 20 to 30 years, it's going to start... When the baby boomers start dying off, it's going to start collapsing. And like, we're going to see that in China sooner, probably than here, because of their one-child policy. It's already happening in Japan. And it's going to happen here, and it's going to wreak devastation on the economy. So that's part of the setting.
We watched that and we went, that'd be an interesting world to explore, like as far as, what's that world kind of look like? The seed of the story actually came from... It was a drug that they're developing.
For post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah. And it has some similarities to what the drug we used in the film. But beyond that, after that, there's different ideas that are in your head, and they just get all kind of thrown into the story to make it a...
Yeah. The question, what happens if you get a totalitarian society in which everybody is taking drugs to forget all their stresses, like... Not just post-traumatic stress disorder, but any stress in your life. Oh, I got to take a drug. So so I don't remember that. It makes for a very weak population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to get back to your question about what else we're extrapolating. I think we're just looking at political events, just the whole, I probably don't even have to say this, the culture war that we're in right now, it appears that we're losing, you know, just from a purely objective point of view. We keep moving that Overton window to the left, to the left, to the left, and things that were outrageous when I was 20 years old are now accepted. And if you don't believe in them, then you are, you've got a totally unacceptable point of view if you don't accept these things that were totally outrageous. And you keep moving that on and on, and you, that's where we're going.
Yeah, and then you can take those ideas and then it's kind of interesting. What we did with Remember is to play them forward and go, what would that look like? And then
there's a lot of things that are happening in society today that we did not deal with in the film. We didn't do anything with Islamization or with what's going to happen with China. You know, I said maybe all these people should have been Chinese wearing the head. You know, so we just kind of dealt with one or two things. You know, if we just had a more and more taking our freedoms away and more government control, more and more taking our children further and further away from us. I was 30 years a public school teacher. And one of the things that I was always amazed at is that parents gave me their kids for 5 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And then they went home for a couple hours and went to all their sports and dance, and then they went to bed. And then I got them. I had them most of their waking hours. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
And then there's this push for full day kindergarten, and junior kindergarten, and daycare. It's just the family is being broken up in our society, and that was Plato's design.
You used a quote from Plato. I can't remember the quote. Can you remember the quote?
No father, his child, no child shall know his father.
Yeah, and I was surprised that Plato said that, because Plato I think you said this in your commentary in the movie. He's a wise man. You know, we look to him for all his wisdom, and then he actually is not as squeaky clean as you might think that he is with his wisdom.
Yeah. So.
Well, you know, if you come at life from a purely secular point of view, you know, he just says, well, it's like a farmer. Of course, a farmer is going to take the best stock and put them together to get the best offspring. And he says, why wouldn't we do the same? We, as the wise philosopher kings, should take the best stock and breed the best offspring. And then we, as the wise philosopher kings, would know best how to raise those offspring and to teach them. It's a rather logical point of view if you don't begin with God at the beginning.
Yeah, if you don't have that eternal perspective, yes. If it's just the temporal. Well, let's talk then about while you were making this movie, what would you say was your greatest difficulty as you were producing this? I do want to say quickly before you answer that, I found this movie very interesting because I've seen some bigger budget independent science fiction movies that don't look nearly as good as this movie and don't flow nearly as good as this movie. I mean, now when I say bigger budget independent, it's still independent. You know, it's not Cloud Atlas or something like that, where it's just this gorgeous looking movie, but which, by the way, Cloud Atlas, I did not like at all because it just didn't make any sense, but it looked gorgeous. But yeah, I do like watching low budget sci-fi just to see what, you know, people are doing and, you know, in the trenches or whatever. And this looked better than that stuff. But what was your, what would you say would be one of your greatest difficulties as you were making Remember?
Oh boy, that's a difficult question.
I'll pick two things. One, in the writing, we wanted a Christian film, but we didn't want it to be an on-the-nose Christian film. Seems to me that's one of the criticism of Christian film is that it's too preachy. And James Cameron can get away with that with Avatar, but we can't get away with that in Christian film.
Almost get away with it with Avatar. I think people recognize Avatar as pretty vapid. I mean, it's a pretty movie, but most people recognize it's not deep. He's not saying anything new.
So not being too on the nose, yet having a message. We thought that was really important. And yet, and at the same time, not being too artsy. That's the other side of on the nose. You talked about that other film,
Cloud Atlas
being, I can't remember the word you used to describe it, but it sounded too artsy.
Yeah.
So we wanted people to know what they had watched when they were done, but have enough questions in their mind that they could go to the coffee shop afterwards and bounce ideas off each other about what they thought happened.
Yeah, who was this guy? And,
yeah.
What was that character about?
So we felt pretty good about how that came down, but that was one of our struggles through the writing process. And I'd say in the actual filming, it was sound is our nemesis. We're not real happy with how the sound came out. On a small budget, we couldn't hire anybody that was an expert in that area. Anything else, John?
Not really. My dad was the producer on the film, so he dealt with most of the people problems, like as far as like trying to find people to fit in roles, and that was a big faith testing. There was lots of times where we didn't have someone and we were setting up to film that mysterious someone, and they would walk in 5 minutes before and we go, oh, okay, here's our actor. We didn't know who they were just a minute before. And but my dad dealt with a lot of those kinds of problems, and those were unique problems that we hadn't dealt with before to that extent, just because the something unique to the feature film.
Yeah, we decided when we started that we said we can do a feature film. We've done a number of educational films in which we have two actors and Dallas and I on the camera and directing, and we can do that maybe a little bit bigger. But then we ended up with 80 actors, which was about 75 more than we planned. And they're all volunteers, so you have to work around all their schedules. And we also have to work around the schedules of the
buildings we're in.
Yeah, the locations. So that was, as a producer, was an interesting thing. And it was amazing how well it came together, taking all their availabilities and when they all had to be in the same scene at the same place. And yeah, that was an interesting experience.
And you had a lot of children in this movie, which I've heard it said, don't work with animals or children, but you have like two dozen children on the screen.
We didn't have any animals, you notice.
No, no animals. But
well, you know, my experience, I told you I was a school teacher for 30 years, was with younger children. So I know a little bit about that. And we started our filmmaking together, making educational films, which involved child actors. So it's actually something we'd had a fair bit of experience with.
So we felt competent enough to mm-hmm. tackle that mm-hmm. there. I think that was even a bit more of a challenge than we anticipated, though, as far as when we were filming the educational ones, we kind of had two actors and we had a lot longer period of time, whereas this was a lot of kids and a very tight, like we called Child Week, which happened a week after the regular shooting had ended. And we just had all the kids in that week. And it was interesting trying to get that all done, trying to get them not distracting each other while they're, you know, on the playground or doing their scenes.
The two boys that wanted to be in the shot but weren't supposed to be kept showing up in the back. Dallas had to chase them away.
Yeah, or the two girls would just be, you know, like, I mean, they have to sit there and hold their dolls and rehearse their scene.
Do it over
and all
over
these
again.
Kids are running around behind them playing games and
having fun, and
yeah, they're trying to not be freezing cold, you know, and trying not to be too distracted and all those kinds of adventures.
And actually that one scene that I think you're talking about was the playground scene. And again, the sound there, you know, that was very noisy going on and trying to get the sound centered in on those two children and get it right.
And on a small crew, that's a lot to think about, right? Yeah. You've got, you know, you can't just focus on the kids because now you've got to troubleshoot sound. There was water meters and things going.
Yeah.
And we anticipated that. So now we've got to troubleshoot that. We've got to troubleshoot the kids in the background, you know, either being there and they're not supposed to be, or making too much noise, or doing things they're not supposed to be doing. And suddenly there's a lot more factors for this tiny little crew that we worked to think about all at once and go, okay, we still got to keep moving. Otherwise, we'll run out of time.
But, you know, I would say that those were the most fun days of the film. They were a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Well, so those are some of the difficulties. What would you say would be one of the greatest victories that you had while you were working on this? Just those moments where you're just, oh, that feels good.
I don't know. For me, as a visual person, I love to watch it and go, oh, you know, that moment looks good. Or that feels good. And what we did, we were all staying in a kind of in a building that wasn't being used during the day because it was out of town. And so we had all the cast and actors staying in this building, kind of tenting it and sleeping on the floor and things. But at night, we just come and load all the footage into the computer and we just sit around and watch it. And that was a lot of fun because you've got to watch and sometimes you're like, oh, wow, look at that, you know, look at that, what that did. And we didn't even notice that when we were shooting, or that piece of acting was just great, or that piece of camera work was nice. For me, visual effects-wise, there was lots of moments where I was just, you know, doing a fist pump. when somebody would give me something that was really good. I really liked stun rods that were used. They made me really happy. Somebody else did those for me. Just saved me some time. And
you're talking now about the visual effects. Post-production.
Yeah, post-production.
Okay.
You know, that for me was a... You know, I was so excited to see those finally come out. And the bikes that were done, that was another fist pumping motion for me. I was pretty excited about those. And then seeing the soundtrack and all that come together. Things that we didn't do, actually, for the most part. We see that come in, and it's just real exciting.
That soundtrack, by the way, it reminded me of like Battlestar Galactica. I don't know if you've watched any of the new one, but I love the music more than I love the actual show. But it also reminded me of the latest Tron movie. Another one, you know, I just love that. It was just a music video for me. The music I loved, and the visuals were awesome. The story, I mean, there wasn't one, or much of one, but it was. I liked the music there. And it just the music from Remember reminded me of that as the movies.
Battlestar Galactica, yeah, when you said you loved it more than the show,
it was the Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, good. I thought you were talking about Remember there. I thought I heard you saying that you liked the our soundtrack better than our movie.
No.
I was having to give you a hard time about that.
It was Battlestar Galactica that the music I'll go back and listen to, but I won't go back and watch the show itself. It was good once. and bleak, and I don't feel like going through that again.
Rick Holetz, who did the music, did an incredible job, and I think that soundtrack stands on its own really well. Go to CD Baby and look it up and buy it. Look up Rick Holetz.
Okay, so you've got this movie, you've got a message, you've got a Christian theme behind it. What kind of response have you gotten? Because the Christian theme, you said you don't want to be too on the nose, but you don't want to be too artsy. It's there, and it's obvious. You know, it's not hidden anywhere in a deep, dark pocket or anything like that. What kind of response have you gotten to the movie from both Christians and maybe even some non-Christians? I don't know what kind of showings you've had, but what's the response been so far?
We haven't shown, as far as we know, haven't had a large amount of non-Christians see it, but there have been some at the screenings and things like that, and the response is generally very good. There's lots to think about. It's interesting to see the things that people pull out, what they see in the movie. Mm-hmm. Sometimes things that were more in our subconscious that we didn't even think about we were putting in there. What's in your head tends to come out on screen, and so you got to be careful what's in your head. and
sure enough,
just the interesting things. Talking to the projectionist at one of the theaters we showed at, and you know, he was just, wow, is that, you know, those messages about drugs and stuff was real powerful and all that. And so, you know, that's what he saw there.
We've had some really positive feedback. I wish that more people at this point have seen it. Lee Dwiggin with Chalcedon Foundation wrote a review for us, our first review, that was just so glowing. I couldn't have written it better myself. Actually, I couldn't have written it. He wrote it so well. So we've got a lot of really positive feedback. We haven't got a distribution, though, and we've got some theories on that, that the typical Christian film is really aimed at a different
market demographic. And so we took a few risks making mm-hmm. this a Christian sci-fi. There aren't really a lot out there unless you're talking about another apocalyptic type film, you know, another Left Behind or something.
The End Times kind of thing.
Which there's another one of those coming out.
With Nicolas Cage?
Can you believe that? I don't know anything about that at all.
That either says something about Nicolas Cage or says something about the movie. I'm not sure what it's saying.
Both franchises are slightly desperate.
I think we're kind of outside the margins of the market, though.
Yeah.
A little bit. So I think that we might be a bit of a risk for the distributors right now.
Which means we have to do things uniquely to try and prove ourselves and try and, you know, break into the market and create that niche. Because, mm-hmm. you know, like I was saying, there's not really much out there except for apocalyptic end of the world films, or, you know, there's maybe a few kind of small ones, but there's really not much. So going first into that territory in a way means we get a lot of sticks in our eyes and have to cut down a lot of trees and cut through a lot of foliage as we go, right?
Yeah, we have had some positive results. We've entered in the San Diego Christian Film Festival and won the best international narrative feature film there. We won a Pixie Award from the American Pixel Academy for
visual effects,
a platinum, which is the top award they give. And we are right now a finalist in the San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival, which is the largest Christian film festival in the world. It actually has the largest cash prize of any film festival. So we're pleased to be a finalist in that. So we are getting some, you know, some good feedback that way.
And it's always fun, like we did when you do your screenings or whatever, and have lots of people asking questions about all those different, what they see in there and the different messages and how, you know, it's difficult to strike that balance between, you know, being too subtle, it's almost artsy and people aren't sure what you were really saying, or being so on the nose, it's a little bit, you know, why didn't you just make a documentary? And I think we did all right there. It's really hard and we've still got, you know, things to learn in that regard, I think. But we did a pretty good job, I feel like, for our first film. And generally the response is that way, that people are intrigued by the ideas and are either looking into them or going, wow, you know, that's like what's happening in
Korea. We had one guy stand up and say, that's at the end of a showing, to address the whole group in the theater. He says, that's what's happening in North Korea right now. The children are being taken by the state and families who try to get them back are being executed, that sort of thing. So,
lots of interesting responses and overall very, very positive. Yes.
So you mentioned that one of the reasons that you made this was because you like science fiction. I'm going to ask you what some of the science fiction you actually like and maybe some of the whys behind it in a moment. But is this your first, this I guess mostly goes to you, Greg, as the writer. Is this your first kind of foray into writing or creating science fiction? Or have you done anything like that before?
As far as science fiction goes, no, this is the first. No.
So what kind of, I mean, we talked about difficulties of theme and stuff like that, but what kind of difficulties were there if this is your first time trying this? Or was it, did it feel like you were just writing something? Did it feel just very natural?
I don't think the genre presented any kind of obstacle. You know, I've written other things and other genres, and it was just a different setting. You know, it's set in the future instead of present. So,
and dealing with, you know, something a little bit more, you know, human-made, the technology or something. Probably the part that made it more difficult writing-wise would actually be the fact that it's called a thriller. And that we spent a lot of time trying to figure out how the story was going to end. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of times where we had to inverted the story 3 or 4 times where, you know, the good guys, everybody just switched places and the main character and the second supporting actor would, You know, okay, let's make the supporting actor the main character, and the guy, is he in the bureau, or is he outside, or is he, where is he, and what's he doing, and changing, basically flipping the story all over the place, because we couldn't figure out how it's kind of complicated, a story, a thriller, and you're trying to make people have to figure it out, but at the same time, you have to figure out how it's going to go, and that can be quite difficult, how to tie all those strings together.
Yeah, a good story will have at least three story arcs, three character arcs. When we did decide who the three characters we were following were, trying to get all their stories to flow together, I think that was the biggest issue. So it wasn't so much a science fiction issue as writing a good feature film. I don't think I've written anything this long before.
Okay.
And one scene, for example, that we had difficulty with was a scene at the end, and they're running away from soldiers chasing them. And you were writing that, and I remember you came to me and you said, I've just been writing it, and not worrying about how it's going to end. Just to take that piece of advice and try it, see how that works out. And I've got them to the top of the building, and the guys are right behind them. And now I don't know what to do with them. I can't write the next page because the next page they get caught. Yeah. So. End of movie. So we had to come up with creative ideas there. Okay, how can we get them out of this situation now that we've placed them in?
As far as science fiction goes, one of the things, there's different kinds of science fiction. The science fiction that I grew up with was Star Trek and 2001 A Space Odyssey. Those futuristic, although 2001 was 12 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was futuristic when it came out, though. I mean,
those futuristic with lots of technology in it. This was not really that. This was more of a futuristic drama.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology, other than memory leaf, which is the drug, which played a really key part,
took a back seat.
Yeah, the technology was mostly the dressing that took place afterwards. It wasn't really that central to the plot. Although, as I said, the memory leaf
was
very central to the plot.
But I think that added to the subtlety. They were just using this stuff. They were just using the little iPads that are not, it's like a piece of cellophane and it's got the screen on there, and I'm like, oh, that I can see that happening, he picks up the one medicine thing, I think, and the label like popped out like a holographic label or something like that. I mean, it's just these little subtle details that were just kind of there, and it made it feel, I guess, more naturalistic and more like you're watching something that's happening, rather than watching like 2001, where, oh, we're going to watch the pen float because it's 0G and you've never seen anything like this before. And we're going to watch it for an hour.
And then... Now you have, because we're still watching it.
Yeah.
I don't know how old you are, Ben, but when that movie came out, that was amazing. I mean, there wasn't anything like that ever before.
I still contend that it's amazing. The first time you watch it, I mean, you're watching where it all came from.
Kids didn't feel the same way.
I'm in the minority with my co-hosts on the podcast, especially Dr. Jace. Every time I bring it up, he's like, don't even bring it up. I don't even want to talk about it. It's just the most boring thing ever. Why would anyone watch that movie? I'm like, you want to watch it once so you know where the science fiction stuff you're watching today came from. I mean, that's the origin.
I grew up wanting to be the first man on Mars because I knew that the moon was already going to happen without me being old enough to do anything about it. And I would play in my basement by putting the chairs on their backs and my friend getting in the chair next to me. And we're in this capsule and we're taken off. That was my childhood, was growing up was in outer space. And when that movie came out, it almost made it real that you could actually, mm-hmm. And it wasn't, that movie was not about the story. The story was horrible. It was about being able to be in that place.
Yeah.
To be in space. And people who grow up in the last 20 years or 30 years have had that all around them in Star Wars and all kinds of films. But that was, for somebody who had only seen the moon landing in black and white, to actually be there.
Yeah.
And see how it would all work and see the pen float in space. It was an experience. It wasn't really a very good story.
Well, and that's the same thing you mentioned Avatar earlier. It's the same kind of thing where I watched Avatar in 3D, and when I walked out, I was just, oh, that was amazing, because I felt like I was there. Mm-hmm. But then talking to some friends about the story, and
you start thinking about the story, and you go, wait a minute.
I'm not going to watch this on my little rinky TV in my room, you know, because there's nothing there, man. But when you're there and it's all around you, I mean, they created a world. And it's the same kind of thing with 2001. Again, I still think that fans of the genre should watch it and suffer through the 2 hours of what might be boring compared to Star Wars. But that's just me. So, I also liked Star Trek the Motion Picture. So, and my friends call it Star Trek the No Motion Picture. What other science fiction has, I guess, kind of inspired you here? Maybe not necessarily for this movie, but just in as creatives or as fans of the genre.
You want to speak to that, Dallas? I've talked a lot about me.
I don't know. I think one of the things I really like about sci-fi is the exploration value of it. Like, I know some sci-fi fans really don't want to. They complain about, you know, just a new thing every single episode. Uh-huh. I like those ones. They almost stand alone, and it's, you know, here's a new place, and we get to explore this new place. And that's like Stargate does that for me. Like, you know, you go through there, and it's a new place every time, something new. And I kind of like that more than the overarching stories, actually. And you know, Star Trek does that a bit, and those are probably the two we've watched the most. I'm trying to think. There's probably other ones, but.
This might be a loaded question, but have you read or seen, and you kind of already alluded to not seeing it, but have you read or seen any good Christian science fiction?
That's pretty rare stuff.
I've read some good Christian science fiction, but I can't say that I've seen a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, there's Time Changer and Unidentified. Neither of those is spectacular. As far as Christian movies, kind of deal with sci-fi-ish topics. And then as far as writing, I can't even... I remember there was a science fiction youth series that I read for a little bit when I was young, but I don't think it was particularly good. I mean, of course, then there's C.S. Lewis's
trilogy.
Right?
His trilogy.
Well, the third one really doesn't count as a sci-fi.
Okay.
I don't think the second one counts as sci-fi, honestly. I mean, they go to another planet, but it's a magic coffin, you know. Lay down in this box, and the angels will take you. That's not science fiction.
And there was one very similar to Out of the Silent Planet. And I can't remember the name of the author, but he was the editor of Christianity Today. And this was about maybe 25 years ago. And I wish I could remember the name of it, but it was a very similar kind of theme. And I thought it was really well written as well. The idea that God may have created other, I don't know that I agree with this, mm-hmm. but the thought that God may have created other sentient beings with souls like ourselves in his image, who did not fall, and somebody from here goes there and experiences that, being very different. But there's a lot of images and things that I carry in me that were written by C.S. Lewis and that other author in those series. You talk about the second one. What was it, Paralandria? To me, that... I can only remember the floating islands and mm-hmm. the idea that there's an Adam and Eve on this other planet. And at some point, if they don't give in to the temptation, that temptation is going to be removed, and then you've got this perfect world. Isn't that what we wish we had here?
Yeah, yeah.
Wish our great-grandfather and mother had just said no to that serpent. And just to being able to imagine what that world would have been like, I think that's a big part of that. And in this one that I was mentioning, that was this other one, the author from Christianity Today, I one of the images I have is the Adam and Eve character from that other galaxy, part of this galaxy. I'm not sure how far out they were. We're still alive. And can you imagine that if Adam and Eve were still alive today, what kind of technology they could have created by now?
Well, and they would have had to, because we would have had to leave the planet. I mean, there's...
Well, the exploration they could have done. I mean, the things that humankind could have accomplished without sin and without death. You know, every Einstein that's been born and Isaac Newton, and that would all be collaborating and had thousands of years to work on their ideas, it would be that would be mind expanding.
Yeah, unfortunately, that would just be science fiction for us at this point, because this is our world.
Maybe that's what our next world will be like.
I speaking of what's next, what's next for you? What's on your plate? What's on your agenda?
Dallas has had a few ideas. Why don't you speak to that, Dallas?
Right now we're just kind of looking around. We haven't set anything in stone right now. I'm kind of wondering about the possibility of a television show, maybe a sci-fi television show. I can't remember. I was watching a sci-fi television show, an Andromeda or something, and I was going, wow, each one of these episodes is like a theological sermon, like it's brutal. But it was just so full of stuff, even when they weren't, sometimes they were trying to say something, but sometimes they weren't. I was like, wow, the potential opportunity is there for, you know, not necessarily pushing anything, but just demonstrating stuff is really neat. And so that's on my brain. I don't know if that'll happen. I don't know much about television at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, then we'll probably be looking at another movie sometime here in the next little while.
But and I think one of the tricks with Christians doing science fiction is to be theologically accurate and have an actually consistent biblical worldview. And so there are things that are in popular science fiction that we know are not biblical. And so we need to be careful that we shape a world that is the reality that God created, not the one that we want to create. At the same time, being something somewhat fantastical and somewhat intriguing and mysterious and all things that we want science fiction to be.
Yeah, so tackling, like we've done some brainstorming on a science fiction television show, for example, and it's a lot of work. It's not as easy just to throw something together and say that'll do. There's a lot to think about and a lot to go. Okay, what are the end ramifications of this, and where is this going to take us? And having to think through, do a little bit more work maybe. And maybe that's one of the reasons maybe why we started with a world like Remember. That's in Remember, is it was a little bit easier, it was a little bit closer to home.
Yeah, yeah.
And, we didn't have to do as much background work. Even beyond theological things, there's a lot to think about how, if you're doing something in space, how one little technology is going to have affect how your storyline pans out when it comes to travel or it comes to.
So the biggest thing being, I think, is creating the universe, creating the world, if you would, that the story is going to be set in.
And especially with a television show or something, you're kind of stuck with it. It's hard to change it later. I know sometimes they television shows, everybody hates that. That's the worst.
Well, there was a Canadian sci-fi Space Hunter or something like that. And they did the first season, and then they did the second season and set it 100 years in the future. and one of the characters had been frozen, and so they kept one character from first season, kept the spaceship, and then completely changed the whole cast other than that. I don't know why. I wasn't like a fan of the show. I just came across and thought, oh, that looks interesting, and then watched some of the first season episodes and then looked it up on Wikipedia, and they're like, well, that's weird. Why would you do that? But
just start a new show.
Yeah. Yeah. So well, we don't want to get stuck with something like that. Where we're stuck. Let's put them in cryo and
let everyone die, and then some other people will find them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to say I recommend to our listeners, remember, I do recommend it, that they watch it and get a chance to see it. So where can they find this? On our Facebook page, we've linked to your Facebook, which is, I think it's just facebook.com/, is it Remember Movie or Remember?
Remember Movie.
Okay. Yeah. I can't remember what the...
That's a joke that's gone around and around.
I'm sure it has.
There was so many jokes on set. It was crazy.
We just did our episode about the seven deadly sins. We did Sloth. And I don't know how many times we did the joke about, well, we finally got around to it. We got to do the...
Facebook.com/ Remember Movie.
And then do you have a website or anything else like that you'd like to let us know? And then I'll also put it in the show notes for the blog post.
Yeah, the remembermovie.com is the website for the movie itself, and there'll be links to buy it there. It's on Amazon, though it's a little bit hard to find. If you do dig, you might be able to find it there.
Yeah, if you just put in Amazon, just search Remember, you're going to get something like 120,000 results. So, if you put in Movie Makers with it, that's the name of our business that...
Production
that group that made it. So if you put Remember with Movie Makers, then it'll come up. But make sure you heard the word "the" at the beginning of our website, theremembermovie.com.
Okay. And so last question for you then. Making the movie, listening to your commentary and even some of this interview as well, and this is for both of you, so don't try and pass this off to one or the other, okay? How has making this movie, how has that enhanced your faith? How has this, or how has it challenged maybe your faith? Just kind of, you don't have to get too deep into it, but from the beginning to the end, what kind of changes did you go through?
I think for me, the thing that this movie really brought out was, I would use the word faith, but because we just used that, we'll use the word trust.
Sure. Okay.
Is it definitely brought out how much we can trust in God to give us what we need. There's a phrase, and I can never quite quote it right, but it's that God gives you what you need to make the movie he wants you to make today. Today, he doesn't give you what you need to make yesterday's movie today or tomorrow's movie today. He's given you what you need today to do what you need to do today, and that he also that he orders what he pays for what he orders for. Sorry. And so when we needed something, he sent it. And there was so many times where we didn't have within ourselves, we were stuck or. We didn't have the people, we didn't have the location, we didn't have the money, we didn't have this or that, and it came through last minute that God likes to show off and make sure that you know it's him, and coming through that you couldn't have done it, okay, now here it comes. And definitely that was a big thing just through the entire movie. And I think it's an interesting theme to have... as a personal experience going through the movie, because that's what the name of the movie is, Remember. And that's what God commanded in the Old Testament. That's what God is always telling the people of Israel. Yes. Remember, 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 remember. Don't forget what God did for you. And through the whole movie, he was doing things for us, and we were having to remind each other sometimes, you know, look, he did this for us. just even yesterday, or and now that it's over, we need to continually remember that he's done all these things for us and for this project that we couldn't have done ourselves.
Yeah, and I will just piggyback on that by agreeing. I was able in this film, in this project, to, I think, trust, as Dallas said, in a way that I have never been able to do before. Somewhere at the beginning when we said, okay, let's do this, we said we're only going to be able to do this if God is in it, because we didn't trust in ourselves to do it. And I was able, through some sort of miracle, to be able to carry that attitude through the whole thing in ways that probably in other areas of my life I wish I could do as well. And that was just to not stress about it. And as producer, I think if I had taken on the stress that I might in my own personal finances or some of the other areas of my life that I have, I would have had an ulcer. I would have gone crazy, because there were all kinds of times, as Dallas alluded to, when we didn't have what we needed. We didn't have the prop that we needed for the tooth until about an hour before we needed to film it. And we didn't have the actor that we needed for Jackson. We were setting up the set. The main actor, Justin, comes in and he says, "So who's playing Jackson?" And I said, "God hasn't shown us that yet." And
we're filming in 15 minutes. You can pray about it. That's
yeah. So, and I felt at the time that I genuinely felt that way. That if we were going to film this movie, if we were going to make it, God, it had to be God's movie. And there were just endless stories like that. I think even as simple things, like if you look at the two main characters' leather jackets, it was the day before we filmed. We still didn't have those jackets. And I went over to Walmart, and there they were, two jackets that we bought. And I went back a couple months later to buy one for myself, and there wasn't any there, and I haven't found one in any Walmart anywhere. I've been looking for one. So they were there at the right time. And the kids all wear white turtlenecks, which were in the Salvation Army thrift store for $1 a piece, brand new, 20 of them hanging on hangers when we went in, and there they were. And we told the kids to bring their own, but no kids had a white turtleneck.
Yeah.
Said, okay, we got 20 of them. Pick one. I could just go on and on with stories like that. That's, people say, how did you film a film like that for $4,000? And it's because God provided over and over and over again. He provided the $4,000 too. We didn't have that. That was through an Indiegogo campaign. Now at this point, I'm remembering and reminding myself, when I'm kind of get a little bit worried about distribution, because we're not, frankly, haven't sold a lot of these, and we know it's a good film, and we know it's God's film. By the way, if you look at the end of the film, the very end, look down at the river. We didn't notice this until somebody in one of our screenings said to us,
"Yeah, it was like the fourth screen."
Yeah,
or something.
Did they said, "Did you put the cross in the river?" What cross?
So we had to rewind it, and everybody's pointing.
So we went back and looked at it, and in the ice, in the river, there's a cross. And so we say God signed the movie. So we figure if God made the movie, He'll get it in front of the eyes that He wants to see it. So yeah. That's the takeaway that I'm at right now in my life.
I once thinking of some of my own writing and some of the opportunities that have been given to me by God, I've wondered, does God get the extra 10% now for being my agent too? So we tithe, and we also give him the agent's 10%.
Yeah, probably.
Well, thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk to me about the movie. And we will have links on our website to where people can get to your website if they want to just, you know, get lazy and not type it in, I guess. I don't know. They're going to be typing in someone's website. But I do appreciate it. And like I said, it's a fantastic film. I really can't believe, you know, listening to some of the commentary and some of what you're saying here, I mean, there should be no reason for me not to believe. Is there anything else you'd like to add, or anything that we haven't covered, or Or do you want to just say goodbye?
Well, you were going to ask us what our famous Lewis.
Oh, that's right. Because we're talking about C.S. Lewis this month, or this year. To talk
about Lewis already, but.
Well, what is your favorite? Because, I wrote it in my notes. There was two Lewis books that I was reminded of in watching the movie, and one is That Hideous Strength, and the other is The Abolition of Man, and both those are kind of about, you know, just some cultural paradigm shifts, especially for him in England at that time, where he really was, you know, looking at the education system and what was happening with what they were doing with their children, and, you know, kind of writing about it. And then with That Hideous Strength, it's a family thing, you know, where you have, of course, That Hideous Strength has a lot of family stuff in it with the married couple, but where again, they're just looking at what does the academic life, you know, and the universities and that kind of thing. And where's that going? But I just was reminded of those two books in watching Remember. But yeah, I did mean to ask you, because this is, we're doing a year of C.S. Lewis. We're reading through all of his fiction and some of his nonfiction. And so I was going to ask you, what is your favorite C.S. Lewis book and why?
Well, you know, it's interesting what you said about Abolition of Man and That Hideous Strength, because I think I read those. I know I read Hideous Strength. And I'm pretty sure I read Abolition of Man like 35 years ago. And I struggled through them and didn't really enjoy them. But it's interesting that you say that it's in the story, because it gives you an idea of how putting those things into your mind comes back out of who you are. So that's it's an interesting to say that. I'd say over the years, my favorite book by C.S. Lewis is The Great Divorce. I've just, that had a powerful impact on me, that book, about that view of what it means to estrange yourself from God. Those who do so really don't want any part of it. And it deals with the whole problem of hell in a way that's rather eloquent, and I don't know that it's complete. But that people who don't want a part of God really don't want a part of heaven, because heaven isn't a place. Heaven's a person. Yeah. And if you don't want a relationship with God, but you want to go to heaven, then I guess you're not really wanting heaven, because heaven is about God. And that the whole setting of people who try to make their hellish place somehow in their... In their eloquent language, to be somewhat heavenly, it's quite comical. But I really enjoyed that
book. And that book is so visual too. It's the imagery that sticks with you in that book. It's this visual parable, almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wrote a movie. I mean, that would imagine that as a movie, because it's all just, you know, the horse and the lizard turning into. I mean, it's just all these things stick with, where he's trying to walk across the water. Because he's not solid, but the water is. He's walking across the river, and it's bouncing up and down, and he has to balance himself on the waves of the river, and the blades of grass, he can't even, they don't even bend underneath his weight, because he's so intangible there in heaven. It's just, yeah. How about you, Dallas? You have a favorite, or?
Oh, nothing that deep. A Horse and His Boy. I always like that one. Got a good story. I always, when they're making these Narnia movies, I go, that's the one they really need to make, because they don't have to change it much, because it's actually got a proper story arc in it.
Yeah.
I just thought it's my favorite one of those.
Dallas is reading the books to his little brother, his 9-year-old brother. That's neat to see the two of them together going through those books.
Now, are you reading in the order they were written, or are you reading them in the order that, like, they're being published now, where it's Magician's Nephew first?
We're going to get into this, are we?
I'm just asking. I'm not pushing an agenda here.
Order they were written.
Okay.
Just because it's tough to get into the Magician's Nephew if you don't have the background. Once you have the background in it, it's really interesting.
Good. That's the correct answer. Thank you.
That's the correct answer.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's the.
I like thinking of Magician's Nephew as the first one.
Well, it's definitely the first. You just don't hit it first. Yeah. That's all.
Well, to me, it just hits you different when you're. When you read the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe first, and then you read The Magician's Nephew, and oh, well, that's where the lamppost came from. Oh, well, that's where that happened. It's a really good prequel. I mean, a prequel well done, compared to some of what we're getting with some things like Star Wars or whatever.
Definitely one of my favorite of the series is The Magician's
Nephew. I love The Magician's Nephew, and if they do that for a movie, I hope they do it right. I don't know if they could visually do it right.
Yeah, it's got some pretty crazy imagery.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Like I said, I appreciate you spending the time with us.
Well, thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure.
So I hope that you, after hearing their story, have a little bit of motivation. I know that I found myself looking at some of the excuses that I've been making for some of the things that I've not been doing. I mentioned in the interview that my entry into comic books was similar to what inspired them to make Remember, and I just wanted to close with just a bit of that story very quickly. I got started in comics because I belonged to an online group of Christians who were interested in making comics, and there's a lot of talk about we should do this or someone should do that, but not a lot of action. So finally, a friend of mine said, why aren't we just doing something? And I took that to heart, just like what happened with the Lamamans. And got together a group of artists and said, let's just do it. Let's just do something. And we put together a short 10-page story. It was black and white. I'm embarrassed by the writing that I have on display there. But it was the first thing, you know, and we did it. We just did it. And I want to just extend that motivation and that encouragement to you. Like the Lamamans, we didn't have much funds, but we had vision, and like the Lamamans, we found a way to do it. And the difference is that we put together this, you know, little 10-page book that led to building some relationships and eventually to doing other projects and eventually to my career. But look at what the Lamamans did. I mean, they $4,000 and they came out with a feature film. And it's amazing what they did there. So I hope their story encourages you to do two things. The first thing I hope it encourages you to do, go to RememberMovie.com, check out the Remember movie. And the second thing, if you are a Christian creative, you're an artist, you're a writer, you're a filmmaker, whatever it is that you are or want to be, and you're just waiting for that perfect moment to start moving forward with the dream or the vision that you believe God has given you, that perfect moment to start is now. Don't let the things that you don't have stop you from using the things that you do have. Go for it. Just go for it, you know, and if you don't have the funds to do that big thing that you want to do, find the smaller thing that you can do right now. And don't just wait for everything to fall into place. Get started. Get going. Just go for it. So that's our episode, and I really appreciate you listening. Totally on another track here. If you like this podcast and would like to give us some support so that we can, you know, cover some of our operating costs, please make sure you check out our affiliate link to audible.com, where you can get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/strangers. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for whatever device you like to listen to things on, including the audiobook Out of the Silent Planet, which is February's C.S. Lewis Book Club book. Just sign up for their free trial. Get your free audiobook and cancel at any time. And just remember, if you cancel, you get to keep that free audiobook. So I do thank you for listening. And next episode, Steve and Dr. Jace will be back along with a special guest as we talk about theatrically released animated Disney movies, excluding Pixar. We'll have a catchier title for that next episode, I promise. I know we didn't have any feedback in this episode because of the nature of things, but we would love to hear from you. You can contact us by visiting our website, strangersandaliens.com, where we have a blog with reviews and articles and announcements and that kind of thing. And there's some fun conversations going on in the comments there. Or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangersandaliens. Again, there's some fun conversations going on there, inspired by this podcast episode, that search for Christian science fiction. I put out a question just today or yesterday asking what Christian science fiction do you recommend? And I got some really good feedback there. Send us an email or a Facebook message if you'd like to comment on some of our episodes, like our recent sloth episode for the Seven Deadly Sins. And definitely, you know, if you want to hear Shazbot read your message, contact us on Facebook or through email at podcast@strangersandaliens.com. Or if you'd like to hear your own voice instead of Shazbot, you can call us and leave a message on the Strangers and Aliens hotline, 1-840-37-ALIEN. That's 1-840-372-5436. And if you really like us, then please rate us and maybe even leave a review of our podcast on iTunes. We have a link to our iTunes feed on strangersandaliens.com. But I do ask that if you really don't like us, then please don't leave a review or rate us with, you know, one star or whatever, please. And thank you for not reviewing us if you don't like us. I really appreciate that. So until next time, thanks for listening and Godspeed.